Hi, and welcome to International Writers Network. And as usual, we have a great privilege, and I mean it, an absolute privilege, that I'm here today and I'm in awe of Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald, who has come to spend some few minutes with us on the platform International Writers Network. George, you are totally welcome.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Now, what I love about you is that you actually told me your age. Other people tried to hide their age. You're wonderful. You're looking fabulous for 57. You're a former boxer in your youth. You were in the hit band D11 Runners, a great band in the 90s. And you said your parents are from Ballyfermot.
They're from Ballyfermot, both my parents. My mother was from Deasy's Road, Ballyfermot. My father was from Lally Road, Ballyfermot.
And you've written six books.
I've written a lot of books, but I've published six, probably.
You've published six. That's just fantastic. And, you know, I love documentaries. You also directed documentaries?
Yeah.
And you're also... I'm not sure whether you're still doing it now. You can correct me if I'm wrong. You also, you know, you have your own radio show with Phoenix FM.
I've had that for about 5 or 6 years now. I've taken a break, but I should be going back to it soon. But yeah, I've done that, yeah. And I also work with another guy, the Fingless Maypole Festival. It's an online radio station as well. And I do a bit of art as well. I won an award as an artist as well. So there's a lot in the bag there.
There is a lot there, but let's just try to unpack some of them.
Yeah.
Now, do you know, for someone who's written so many books, yet you've gone to, and you're also a musician.
Yeah.
Because through the band, you're a musician. Yeah. I heard one of them, I said, my God, I could be bopping on this all night.
Yeah.
Do you know, so now, what was it that made you want to write those kind of things?
It's not so much... Obviously, I wanted to write for some reason. I left school at 15 years of age, and my educational level was extremely poor. In actual fact, when I started writing for us, I didn't know how to use a computer, but I eventually figured out how to turn it on. And then I only used one finger, and everything I put on the computer was redlined. And the computer itself normally gives you an option to spelling check, but I couldn't even understand what I was saying.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the truth, right? But I didn't see that as an obstacle. I just seen that as something that can be overcome in time. And I did overcome it in time. And I kept going. Like, and a friend of mine, to give you an understanding, a friend of mine, Michael MacDonald, he wrote a few books himself. He hasn't published anything, but he's a very good writer. I've read stuff belong to him. He's also a school teacher. But he actually read a book belong to me. I sent it to him in an email, one I was going to publish called We Lived in the Sky. And when he read it, he said to me, this is what he said. I'm not saying what I said. He said, was that everything that comes out from this day forward should be based on the standard of that writing, because that is incredible. So in other words, what I'm simply trying to come across here with is the fact that when you say to somebody you left 15 year school and your education was poor and you write books, well, they say, well, then automatically they think, well, they must be brutal, but they're actually not. They're actually very good. I have an ability to write, and the whole purpose of writing for me is not only to write, but it's basically to try and capture the human experience and to put on paper the human experience, so when you're reading it, it actually comes alive to you. You can see the characters. That's the whole purpose. What I try to do, not all the time, but I try to focus on that some of the time, where they're little innuendos, the characteristics come off the page, and whether you can identify with them or not, because some of these are out in their own world, but they come alive. Here's one for you. My hope is that when you walk into the tenement with Frankie, you actually can get the scent. You can feel the ambience. You can understand the atmosphere of where these people are living and the struggles in which they live. And that's really it. And the art of writing, to be able to take the smallest amount of words and yet say the most important things and create rhythm, create movement that probably only writers understand, and that writers can probably grasp it more so than people that are not writers. Now, I don't read books myself, basically, really. I don't read them much. What I do, which is another amazing thing, really, I do read a Bible. That's my main book. I read a Bible. Other than that, I wouldn't be a great reader. My wife and she'd be a great reader. But I did come across a book years ago, and basically what it was Frank McCourt's And His Ashes. And when I read the first chapter of it, I understood rhythm. I grasped it. I grasped what he was saying, how he was saying, and how the movement of literature was moving. He was moving it. And I grasped that. And a woman once said to me before, a publisher said to me, write, when you're writing, write to the 4-4-B, So the movement is there, and that's what you look for all the time. Now you don't get it all the time, because the problem is you've got to break it, because what happens there is you have it all the time, but then there's the danger of becoming poetic. Do you know what I mean? Where you don't want the poetic,
yeah,
either.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not a book of poems. But basically, that's where my deepest desire is to capture the human experience and bring it into the literature.
So I'm going to that's really, really fascinating to say. You've broken some rules already for writing. A, you didn't. You said you don't read a lot, but
yeah,
you read the one main book, which, yeah, is the Bible, and of course you've had this other book that influenced you about the rhythm. That's one of the reasons. But no, writers are readers. Readers are writers, and people are like, but no,
yeah.
George Fitzgerald is saying, listen, I don't do that.
No.
Then you said you left school really early,
yeah,
and but that didn't stop your writing, because
no,
you had something in you that wanted to write.
Mm.
Well, what influenced those writing then? That you just had to keep on, you had to bring things out, and you said, you know, you want people to read your work, and if something comes out of the page of the character, the rhythm, all that's happening, people can relate to it, they can smell what's going on.
Exactly.
In that tenement.
I want to show also with literature the essence of the art of it, that it is an artistic endeavour. It's really artistic. You know, it's not only about just getting a pen or a computer and sitting there and writing. Johnny was sitting at the wall, Mary came over to him and saw it. There's more to it than that. There's a whole art in bringing it to that other level. That other level where it becomes, wow, this is we're getting here. You know, like I wrote a line for a guy, and his grandmother says to him, the only person going to prison ahead of you is the van driver who's going to bring you there.
Oh my gosh.
So you can see the van driver going ahead of him. He's the only person going ahead of him. But the fact of the matter is, there's a guarantee he's going there. So she's making this prophetic utterance towards this young kid. So, but yeah, she says an awful lot in one sentence, and it cleans her up. It says what it says. Do you know? And that's, for me, the beauty of writing, and the inspiration of it comes from, well, to be quite truthful with you, even in the secular world, I'm not afraid to say it, I actually believe wholeheartedly, and there's been horrendous battles through it all, to be truthful with you, that it's God inspired. You know, that's what I believe. That's my personal concept, is because it's because really deep down I understand, I know who I am, and I know what I can't do, and I know my lack of abilities that are huge, surmountable. And here's the thing with me, is that not only do I write my own books, I edit them and proof them as well. Right, there's nobody helping me here. I'm doing this by myself. Cover design myself. Lay out everything practically, other than print them.
And does that also mean you don't attend writers' groups?
No, nothing. Like? I never attended anything. Nothing.
And you didn't go to college to go and study
nothing.
This?
Went
no
to
workshop,
nothing.
Nothing.
I went to nothing. I could practically barely spell my name when I started this. This is the truth. I went to a Bible meeting one time, and I talked to a guy called Peter Tran, and I said to him, Pilate was a Jew. And he says to me, no, he wasn't. I said, it says it in the Bible. This is going back 25 years ago, 30 years ago. He says, where does it say? I said, look, Pilate said, I am a Jew. He said, read it again. I said, Pilate said, I'm a Jew. He said, read it again. I said, Pilate said, I am a Jew. He said, right, I want you to take the words very slowly. Read it now very slowly. Pilate said, I am. Oh, not a Jew. And that was where I was, right back there. And that was even an achievement for me to actually read that sentence, right back there. But here's the reality of it all, that there's a certain, I suppose, message out there, if God is for you, nobody's against you. That doesn't mean there's no obstacles, that doesn't mean there's no perseverance involved. God will not read a Bible for you. He won't read it for you, right? And if he wants you to do something, there will probably be major trials, major tribulations, major costs, major everything at stake. It's not all about sitting down and getting and living in a world of fairy tale adventures, of absolute wonderful things. Life is life, and it can be very, very difficult and very, very hard. But the ultimate goal in the end of it all is, God doesn't ask us to be successful. He asks us to be obedient. And even if there's no success in it, will you be obedient? And if you're obedient in it and there's no success in it, at the end of it all, you come to a God who says, well done, good and faithful servant. You were obedient when you didn't see anything. You were obedient in the morning. You were obedient in doing what I asked you to do. And even though you saw nothing through your life, through this life experience, and you knew it was an experience called life, and you knew one day it would end, the fact of the matter is you knew that I'm waiting at the end of it. And Christ Jesus is the end of the law for all those who believe. And he will say, well done, good and faithful servant. You've achieved the goal. And the goal was to obey me, not to succeed. If success comes, great. And if success comes because you have a platform, and in that platform somebody can ask the question, how come you came from Finglas and you wrote these books? Well, I'll tell you why. Have you ever heard about the man called Jesus? See, ultimately that's what it's all really about, you know. And within that statement and that testimony and that power that comes from God, from heaven, there are so many obstacles, and the dangerous obstacles and the more damaging obstacles is the enemy that's within. And I don't mean within ourselves, because we have a lot of them, but within the church itself, within the church setting. There's not a great acceptance for people like me. Nobody's going to come alongside you and encourage you. In actual fact, it will discourage you. But the point is this as well, is that that's always been the case, that will always be the case. And if somebody out there, and they're very young now, and they're very immature, and they're finding this is a difficult road, because they're finding that they're isolated and that they're not getting the encouragement, David went away and encouraged himself, go and do the same thing. You've got to go and do the same thing.
That is fantastic. I love your vibe. I love what's coming out here, because you are breaking all the boundaries.
Yeah.
And which is okay, because also in this you've also found success, because we've got 6 books and documentaries and other things. Now, what I would like to do is to get your first reading, which is your chapter 5, and to see whether we could just get an insight to what you do. But before you do that,
yeah,
this the book that you wrote in 1917, correct? 2017.
Secret Life.
Sorry?
The Secret Life of Ashley Brown.
Yes, yeah. The Secret Life of Ashley Brown. And then the sequel to it came in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is The Promise Keeper.
Yeah.
And it's The Promise Keeper that we want to get some things from. Do you want to just give us a quick background? And again, because you're a Christian, you're influenced by the Bible.
Yeah.
Yet you're going to this seedy place.
Yeah.
See, and you bring this information out.
Absolutely, because see,
it's quite dark.
It is quite dark. See, a friend of mine actually said to me, he's a writer, Michael Daly. He's written a few books. He's a new book coming out now, I think in September. And he's a broadcaster also for Phoenix FM. He actually said to me when he read The Secret Life of Ashley Brown and The Promise Maker, he said, you've written modern day parables. And I said, and how? What way? He said, do you remember Ashley Brown is lying at the doorway and the man comes along, picks her up, and he brings her to the home where she's saved? And I said, yeah. He said, that's the Good Samaritan. And I said, I never would have saw that. So he opened up my eyes to show me certain things. So personally, myself, what I've done is, Jesus says, follow me and I'll teach you how to fish for men. Now, we don't fish the way some guy standing up in the pulpit can tell us, because he's never had the experience of what I'm experiencing. But the point is, we don't ignore them either. But the point is this, we follow Jesus. And the world is not going to read the Bible, but they might read a book and be inspired.
That's a good point.
Do you know what I mean? That's why I'm doing it. And I bring people into the darkest of places, because it's my characters, nothing's going to harm them, because I'm watching them. I created them before they even understood they were going to be created. I knew them before they were created. I know everything about them. I know every movement, and I know every fault and every failing about them. But I still accept them, and I love them, because they're my creation. And nothing's going to harm them. They're going to go through terrible times, but I'm not removed from their presence. I'm there with them all the way.
And I understand exactly what you've just said, and I think many listeners will be
exactly
able to understand that, hey, we have a creator up there creating. We are created.
Exactly.
He's not going to just pull us out of the hard
exactly.
time. Let's have the first one, because this is really exciting, I'm sure. Isn't it?
Chapter 5, The Promise Maker. New York, New York. What a fantastic city is the location they call New York. Of good reason for believing that I was born there. Times and dates wouldn't be any help to you, the reader, at this point in the narrative. What I will say is, my birth didn't take place in a dignified room overlooking a nice crowded lake. You know the scenes. Birds flying across the sky, smoke rising, happy children skating on ice. Beyond them, the well-furbished apartments with big doors and greeting the guests as they arrive. While inside, proud parents doubt over the new arrival in the car. Oh no, my entrance into this world was nothing akin to the picture I've painted. No, sir. Mine was more like Oliver Twist's, only my ma didn't die. There was no fancy furniture, no greeting men, or no grandparents, as ma ushered me into an Irish slum on the Lower East Side of New York. We lived in a neighbourhood where they boasted over the old sod, comparing it to the glorious haven. Ma said they'd greet you by saying, "Top of the morning to you." Well, that's what she said. Ma sang with the drunks on the stairwells. They sang about a country they never visited. The wind blows in the land never green. No field young ones cry on the ravaged bodies piled high. On the coffin ships they sail from the land of saints and scholars. Ragged and beaten, they fought the mighty seas to the paths flagged in gold. Oh, hallow the god of the sky, where gulls couldn't fly, for a cloud appeared sending down death instead of rain. Ma was an Irish American, a native of this home away home, Irish city, full of every nationality under the sun. Her grandfather sailed the Atlantic on a coffin ship. He came to the port where the streets were paved in gold. He didn't find gold. What he discovered was human and animal excrement up to his ankles in it. Slid, looking for shelter among the tenements in the Five Points, close to the old brewery. I forgot my glasses, so I was having a little bit of a difficulty with that. Go ahead.
Now, we'll get back to the end of to in a few minutes. The character Frankie, he's actually speaking to us, isn't it? And I'm quite fascinated by his mother, by her action. And you leave nothing you don't cover nothing, you just let it all hang out there.
Yeah.
Is that intentional?
Yeah, especially the part. There's a part in it, you wouldn't have come across it. Buster, when he's a kid, he sees this guy called Hatcher. He's in the tenements, 1935. He's about 5-6 years of age, and this guy called Hatcher comes in drunk. It's a real picture of tenement life. He's drunk. There's a woman on the ground in the tenement giving birth to a child. There's two children barefoot, sliding on basically a slop bucket of crap. There's a rat running across the floor. He bashed the rat. Buster comes in. He's a big, tall, bald man, heavy man. He bites the ear off basically Hatcher. And Frankie runs to school at one time, and then he runs back later on that day, sees Hatcher hanging from a window inside the tenement. And then he looks up and he sees Buster behind him. And then he looks down, as Buster makes eye signals, and he sees his own father running around the back of the tenement. They murdered Hatcher. They killed Hatcher. But what he did there was, he made it look like a suicide. Right, and in those days, that was it. He killed himself. Hatcher killed himself. So at a very, very young age, Frankie's witnessing something. And then at another time, Frankie gets a hiding off Buster and his father at the same time. He asks them for a one-on-one. It's freezing cold. He's walking down the street in the snow on his bare feet, because nobody wore shoes. We are living in Dublin had the worst slums in Europe, right? Up in Golden Lane, it was called the Four Corners of Hell. Any given night, you'd look out and you'd see it looked like the path was shifting. The roads were shifting. It was the rats. The rats was rat infested, absolutely squalor, filth, unbelievable impoverishment, because we had the worst slums in Europe, and we also had the biggest brothel in Europe down at the Monto. Did you ever hear the song "Take Them Up to Monto"? Well, that was the biggest brothel in Europe, and that was beside the cage, the corporation buildings. And the corporation buildings was like basically a prison where tenement people were put in there as well. And then you had the animal gang. They wore black shorts, black caps, white buttons. They carried their blades in their caps, and they ran everything. And then you had the madams who ran the prostitutes. Right, so you had this all going on in this particular city.
It's really sordid, isn't it?
Absolutely. But see, the reality is that De Valera came along with the Collie and Dancing at the Crossroads image. We had been through 1916. We'd been through the Civil War. Our news spreading across the nations of the world was, we are a very troublesome city that's murdering bullets and bombs going off in our city. In one day, 30 people were killed, shot dead in Dublin. I think it was Sunday, Bloody Sunday, after that. And then Michael Collins done with the 14 men, he had shot dead. So it was all blood and guts and blood and bombs and all that. So De Valera then comes out of all that, and he decides, right, okay, let's paint a picture of the Collie and Dancing at the Crossroads. So the image of Ireland has to be, we're basically farmers living in this picture perfect land, and that's a wonderful place to be. So Bad News was basically shoved under the carpet. And what they used to do was, May Oblong, she was a madam, she ran all the brothels. This is the truth. She used to bring the prostitutes up. They were called the working class people in the tenements called them the poor unfortunates. The poor unfortunates. They never called them prostitutes. They were poor unfortunates. What they used to do was, they used to get off the trains, and the madams would have men hanging around the train stations in suits looking at women. Go over and help them with their bags. Country women, innocent women. How are you? How are you? I'm up to Dublin. Is your mammy? What's your mammy think? I've no mammy. And where's your daddy? I've no daddy. I have a lovely woman to look for you. She'll get you work. What's her name? May. May Oblong. And before they knew where they were, they were walking the mantle. Right?
Sorry. I have to stop you there.
Yeah.
That you have brought into our heart. And obviously, this story, it's very also current, isn't it?
Because yeah.
These things are happening now.
Yeah,
children being trafficked.
Yeah.
We have all manner of prostitution still going
absolutely.
On. Absolutely. And people just not knowing what to do with their lives. And it's still being covered because Ireland still is the place where everything is so green.
Yeah.
But why are you bringing this to us? Why do we want to know this?
Because here's the point, the real point. Now listen, when you hear this, you had the biggest brothel in Europe, you had a major gang problem down there, you had gambling problems, you had everything going on down, right?
Sir.
And there was nothing could stop it. What May Oblong used to do was, she used to bring the prostitutes up on and dressed up lovely, and she'd bring them down on horse and cart down O'Connell Street, inviting the men down to the Mantle, which is basically down near corporation buildings, down around that particular area, right? Not far from O'Connell Street. And there was a public outcry. And the government's answer was, send them back down to the Mantle, right? Montgomery Street, it was originally called Mantle. Send them back down to the Mantle. So a guy called Frank Duff, was it? He started the Legion of Mary. Now, he didn't believe in the Legion of Mary himself, I don't think, wholeheartedly. He believed in faith in Jesus. But what he did do was, he got a cross, and he said, we're marching on the Mantle. And he marched on the Mantle on a particular day, and he nailed the cross at the highest point in the Mantle, up on the wall, and he got photographs and images of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ, and he said, plant them on every single door of every single brothel. And they destroyed the Mantle. The cross brought down the biggest brothel in Europe by itself, not by priests or bishops or by a legion of men, but by the very purity of the cross itself. It destroyed the biggest brothel in Europe. And that same cross still carries that same power. And all we need is laymen. Frank Duff, whatever his name was, he wasn't the minister, he was a lay person who decided, he saw a prostitute die in his arms and he had enough of it. And he said, we're going to have to do something. And the only thing that's going to defeat this is the cross of Jesus. And he brought the cross. And see, Frankie's born in the Lower East Side of New York, but he comes, see, he says himself, he said, if I wasn't born in hell's kitchen, I was reared in the kitchen from hell. So it was all the one to me, right? So basically, but he's coming into a Dublin that is slowly fading. That's the Dublin he's coming into. So it didn't matter where he was born, but the choice were made for him. But the fact of the matter is, and what I do with Frankie is, I keep him, I give him enough intelligence to keep him ahead above everybody, because he has to be very, very clever to survive what he's gone through. And the reality is, the sad part is, here's the real sad part, there is thousands upon thousands of Dublin Frankies out there. It's not an unusual story. Frankie's story might be unusual, extremely dark and extremely difficult for people that live in Fox Rock and Black Rock and all that, but there's thousands of Frankies, thousands of them. Thousands of them went into the industrial schools, thousands of them were killed, thousands of them never survived, thousands of them ended up drug addicts, and thousands of them went in and out of prison. You know, your man Lord Mount Gardner, he built the tenements in Gardner Street, but he also built Mountjoy. So they were always housed by Lord Mount Gardner. It was either in the tenement or in Mountjoy prison.
It's just fascinating history, and the fact that it's even happening now. Can we just have that last part of that chapter?
Yeah. She says, we looked in the shelters not far from the old brewery. Oh, believe you me, we heard stories of the Bowery Boys, the 40 Thieves, and Al Capone, who grew up near us. An exquisite place to grow, Ma said. What a load of nonsense that was. She cried half her life, breathing away like fire out of a dragon. with a sore head, saying, "The luck of the Irish has fled from us, Frankie. Ma's biggest dream was to leave the city she bragged on and find home, a home in good old Ireland, the country of our fathers, the place of hills and valleys, fresh running water and leprechauns. Yes, leprechauns, 40 coloured ones that walked on water, flew in the sky and danced on the heads of giants." Then, on a hot sun splitting kind of day, she met the greatest leprechaun ever to walk the streets of New York, me da. Da was a full-fledged Irishman. No cheap carbon copy here. If ever there was a walking on water, flying in the sky sort of guy, he was it. He didn't come from the Five Points. He came from the Five Lamps in Dublin. In his time, it was a neighbourhood of murderers, pickpockets, with rat-infested tenements. His world was upside down. Why? Because he couldn't relate to people that walked upright. His dominion was topsy-turvy, where disharmony ruled. The creatures that crawled out of the gutters were his closest friends. So he must have felt at home living among the Irish gangs in the Lower East Side of New York. If Ma had an ounce of sense in that Yankee head of horse, or smallest grain of reason, she'd have ran as fast as her legs could have carried her. Instead, she fell hook, line and sinker for the tin bald Irishman. On a cold day, as the heavens unleashed hailstones, I arrived. There was no kissing at the Blarney Stone. If the luck of the Irish skipped me, Ma, well, it nosedived over me. They baptised me Francis Thomas Smith, but everybody called me Frankie.
Download the podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
Raised on songs and stories.
Hello, Jerry Cooley here, inviting you to join me every Wednesday at 2 o'clock here on Near FM for Raised on Songs and Stories.
It's a good day when you put your feet to the ground, don't mind me telling it to you, even if this is...
So weren't we reared on them?
The Digital Experience. Missed a program or an interview? Catch up now online with the Near FM Digital Experience. We're online 24 hours a day, podcasting every day. Visit nearfm.ie/podcast.
90.3.
This is Near FM.
Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, God. Now, listen, we've come very close to the end. I'm
no
just
going
to ask you the question that we normally have every month. We have a topic. What does fathers mean to you? Just 1 minute. Just help me to do it. What fathers?
Fathers mean to me is people that will absolutely separate their own needs for their own life, for everything, their ambitions, for everything they live for, and import it into somebody else. It's not about a person who biologically brings somebody into the world. Anyone can do that. Animals do that. The fact of the matter is, it's about a person whose life will end in its desires, in everything, the moment that child is born. Because now the new life has come, and it's to give them every single opportunity to reach their goals, their destinies, and everything they can. Now, we've got life kicking in here. Life is part of the story, and it just because you have those desires and you are this father, and you're a great father and a wonderful father and a great mother, life comes in. Life can come in, and it come in through the cracks in the doors, into influences, wherever it may be, wherever that child is going to come into. But the reality is that in all of it, that's simply how I see it as a father myself, is to give up everything to live for this and to watch their lives grow. And that's why I believe, I'll be 58 next month, right? And that's why I believe from the time your son or daughter is born, your life goes very quickly. Because your eye is no longer on you, it's on them. And that's why it goes so fast. You know, it goes... Whew. Like, I went to bed one time when I was 17 and woke up at 58. I said, "Here, this train is moving too fast. I need to go and have a talk with that driver. He needs to start slowing down. We're heading straight very fast somewhere." Do you understand?
I do understand. Oh my God, I could have this conversation with you continuously. But thank you for that. That is very wonderful to say. You live for others as a father. Anybody can father a child. Anybody can throw out their seed out there.
Yeah.
To actually put something. That is really fascinating.
Amen.
That is really a good one. Now, just to come to the end, we have come to the end. Where can we get these fascinating books and how can we follow you?
Well, you can get them. I think the only shops have them now at the moment because the whole COVID thing really went. And even I'm actually coming through the centre here or over there. And there's a shop over there. It's a wonderful bookshop. It's gone. Book Value is gone. And I would have been dealing with that particular bookshop. So it's gone now. So what you can actually do now is, at this moment in time, with these two books, The Secret Life of Ashley Brown and Frankie, and just to give you an insight into it, The Secret Life of Ashley Brown is about, basically, Ashley. And she lives in London. She ends up in London. And she ends up getting trafficked. Or they try to traffic her. A guy called Mr. Picador tries to traffic her. But she meets Frankie and Pitbull, right? They become friends of hers in the book. And in the next book, The Promise Maker, Ashley Brown is back in it again. She's at a funeral, and while they're at a funeral, they go into a pub that's no longer there called the Addison Lodge, and she asks Frankie, "Do you want to read your story?" And Frankie reads the story at that point, right? And it goes up till he's about 17. Now there's a follow up to that called Little Miss Mazza, which is even better because it deals with a particular character called Rosie, and she's a wonderful character. She's very simple, she's very tenement, she's very innocent, but she's also very clever, right? Rosie, and he calls her me Little Miss Mazza. Right, so she becomes known as Frankie's Little Miss Mazza. Right, now whether they put that out next, I don't know, but here's the point, that's where them two stories are connected. You can actually download them from Amazon, and I think it's practically, I don't know whether it's actually free or you can pay a euro or something, so you can download them. That's where you can get them now, so there's no excuses, you know.
Yeah,
if you want
I
to get
think
them
it's something. And then, you know, we're hoping to be made into a drama, a play.
It'd be wonderful. I'm writing a book at the moment, and as I said, that's even better in the sense of a play, because I go into a story where they're dealing with this absolute headbanger of a granny, right? She's nuts, right? And the whole family is basically all on high alert because of her. She's electrocuting everybody, right? And she's the absolute centre of chaos in the whole home. And no one knows that, because she just blends in. She's part of the family, but she's the one that's creating all the difficulties in everyone's life, and absolutely ultimately ends up as this guy called Pitbull. He ends up living the life of crime. He ends up completely different than the family, but the real centre, the real problem, she blames him. You know what I mean? She calls him Pit Pig, Pitbull, Pit this. But the point is, she's the problem. She's the problem. She's the problem is sitting on that floor. But they can't see it. And the point of the story is, not the point, but part of it is this. Be very careful who you invite into your life. Because when they speak certain words or they do certain things, sometimes those things are not reversible. Or we'll all be forgiven. We will be forgiven. The guy who murdered someone who's gone to jail for life will be forgiven, but he'll still have to do his sentence. He'll still do jail. You know? And sometimes in our lives, that what we do, where our lives, we can, the repercussions can be difficult. And I believe this from my own experience. And here's a hard one for us all to hear. God will let us go right to the line of destruction. He'll let us bring our lives to an absolute dark place. He will pull us out when we cry out to him. But there will be a price to be paid for it. Do you understand? And this woman is sitting right in the middle of this. She's the central problem of it all. And no one sees it. Nobody sees it. Until the very end. And I have to be true with you. The story in the end, when Pitbull comes to senses and he eventually comes back to the family as a man, as a spirit-filled man, right? Not overly preachy, not overly sermonized, but just as a man who's come through chaotic things, got his life together, went to college and basically cleaned up his life, and he comes back to his parents' home and his mother and his father and his sisters and his brother. It is the most remarkable reconciliation story, I'm telling you, ever read. And if you don't cry at it, you haven't got a heart.
Well, we'll look forward to it. So in the meantime, we're going to get the two books.
Amen.
Download them. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks very much, Mary.
Thank you.
Really
bye-bye. Appreciate you. And welcome to the International Writers Network, the events page. And we just want to give you some details of what you should be thinking about doing this particular month of September. Now, all the writers groups should be back on course now. I know for a start that the Ballymore Writers Group will be back in the Ballymore Library from Wednesdays and in September, and they're going to start 4:30. But contact Ballymount Library to get all the details there. The same thing will be the Ballyfermot Library. They're starting again in September, and you can get the detail from the library. Now, if you don't have a writers group in your library or your locality, I suggest you and a couple of friends that want to write and love writing, why don't you go to the librarian, the head librarian, and tell them you have a desire to write and to start a writing group. And you'd be surprised, they'll help you to facilitate it, give you a room, and give you a... That is part of what Dublin City Library is doing. And I'm sure it's the same outside of Dublin as well. So get into a writers group. Iron sharpens iron, and lots of good relationship that's been built over the period of time. I'm looking forward to going to the Ballymount writers group, as well as to physically go to the Inkslingers based on the Irish Writers Centre, and with good old Harry Brown, who always takes care of all the writers there. So that's for the writers group. No reason not to have one. Set one up there for yourself with the local library. Now, we do have lots of events in September. It's like a revival of literary and book festivals in September. Now, the best place to contact, I'm going to give you the telephone number and the email. That is +353 89483 3793. I'll say that again, +353 89483 3793. And you could email them at info@dinglepublishing.com. That's info@dinglepublishing.com. Now, I'm just going to go through a couple of the events that's going to be happening in September, and just to encourage you, I tell you, the wonderful things about going to festivals with writers is that you meet a lot of other writers, yes, and book lovers, and it's always exciting. That's why we try to bring you book launches and stuff like that, but those are even book launches. When you actually attend festival, there's so many things, so many, there's big publishers, other people working around, and lots of wisdom. I think wisdom is the principal thing. Let's get wisdom about writing, about what we need to do. So we start off with the Writers' Time Festival, which is from the 1st of September to 30th of September in Dublin at Fingal's Libraries. So that's the Writers' Time Festival, 1 to 30th of September in Dublin. That's at Fingal's Library. You can contact them there. The International Dublin Writers' Festival starts on the 16th to the 18th of September, and you could contact them. That's based in Dublin. They're based in Fine Latest Place. That's the Academy Plaza Hotel. You could also find them on Facebook.com, International Dublin Writers' Festival. That's a good one. They've been going on for a while, and you know, you will really treasure it. And I'm hoping that we'll be able to get one of the coordinators to come and speak to us on one of the programs about this festival. Well treasured. Then we have the Shaking Borg Nature Writing Festival. That's from the 10th to the 12th of September and is in Co-Wicklow at the Shaking Borg. Now, I attended this before COVID, and it was fantastic. It's all nature. It's about writing nature. And it was a very exciting festival at that time. And I saw lots of things. I'm really amazed at what people can write about. It taught me a lot. So you're encouraged to go there as well. The Cash Art Festival is from 15th to the 18th of September. And that's at Tipperary. You could go at Cash Arts Festival. You can find something there. Then the C.S. Lewis Festival, that's 15th to the 18th of September. That's in Belfast. Just want to try across over to North Island there. And it's at C.S. Lewis Festival. I think I may even travel down there because I love C.S. Lewis. Now, the Children's Book Ireland International Conference is at the 22nd September and is in Dublin at Kids Bookshare. So there's so much to do. I'm going to leave that for now. And so try and get to some of that and have a great time. And maybe we'll bump into each other. Look out for Mary. Have a great time. Wonderful to be in a country like Ireland that loves writers and love book. Of course, is the island of saints and scholars. Could we ask for more? Let's enjoy the time. Have a good time. This is the events page. Now, this last part of the show, it's just to bring you some information about the Sunflower Session. They normally would meet at the Lord Edward Pub on Dane Street, just off Dane Street in Dublin. And that's the last Wednesdays. They meet from 7:30, and it's a wonderful atmosphere. I really enjoy it. And we were there last month. And it was lovely to, that's in the July edition, it was really lovely to go there and to just be among poets and lovers of poems. People, not everybody that's there is a writer, but people just love to come in and feel the atmosphere, and people read different things, and some is their own poems. I mean, it's just really a lovely, lovely atmosphere. I think you'll enjoy it. If you're a budding poet, we just like to be around writers and to just learn about different things in poetry forms and different topics. I love the topics about grandmothers and different things that came up during this session. So the latter part of this, I'm giving you, I hope you're going to enjoy it, some extracts of what happened and talking to some wonderful poets and other people who were there. So enjoy, and we'll meet you next time in the International Writers Network with more guests and more information, more news. In the meantime, keep on slinging ink, keep on writing. Have a great time. I'm at
the self-love session, they're based in the Lord Edward, and we're having our first session where people have now gone for a break. And I'm here with Breed Connolly. Hi, Breed.
Hi, Mary. It's lovely that you're here, and I hope you're enjoying it.
I'm enjoying it. So, Breed, what does it feel like to come back to such a session after COVID?
It is absolutely refreshing, energizing, enervating, the whole shebang. Absolutely wonderful. Yeah.
And so far you've had four people read and you're next. What are you hoping to get?
Well, it is just an amazing thing. It's almost like being out of my skin, that I'm not myself. So it really is quite different from being alone trying to write when you're speaking it out and people are listening. It's a beautiful sensation.
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to hearing you read. And can I seize this opportunity to invite you to the International Writers Network to come and talk to us on our platform in Near FM and tell us about your writing journey?
I certainly will.
And I say that's a yes. Listener, she said a yes. So I look forward to interviewing her. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mary.
Hi, we're on the second break for the session, Sunflower Session. And I have with me here one of the Inkslingers, wonderful writer, Susan. Susan, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Susan, how is it coming up to these sessions after COVID?
Oh, it's great to be out and about again. You have a sense of freedom and... freedom and expansion.
And have you yourself found this particular session personally?
Well, I was told about this by a friend, and this is my first time at it.
And how was it?
Oh, it's really good. Some of the poetry is really good.
And what is it about writers in Dublin getting together to do these kind of sessions? What do you think is the motivation?
Well, the desire to write, you can't really explain that. It's just a desire that you have, something that you need to do, that's in you. And it's fascinating to see how different people have different takes on a particular theme.
Yes, I especially like the two grandmother sessions, you know, by Breeder and Catherine, how
yes.
different they were.
Yes, yeah, they were so different, yeah.
So will you be reading tonight?
No, I'm not reading, no. I haven't brought anything along. As I said, this is my first night. I'm just, you know, testing the waters.
And how's the water? Are you treading?
The water is... it's very pleasant. Very pleasant.
So I'll take it you'll be back again.
I will.
Okay, and I want to take this formal opportunity to invite you to the International Writers Network. Our Near FM, we have run a program called International Writers Network. And Susan would love to invite you to come and tell your writing journey, tell us your story, and we'll read your poems.
Oh, thank you.
Right, so I take it that's a yes.
You take what? Sorry?
I take it that's a yes. You will come.
Oh, yes, please, yes.
Fantastic. So I'll make sure I get you the invitation. That was Susan at the Sunflower Session, held the last Wednesday of every month, just starting again after COVID, at the Lord Edward in Pub in Dublin. You can't miss it. It's right opposite Christchurch. And they gather here together, lots of different poets, different people, to just talk poetry, speak poetry. The spoken word is here. And so thanks a lot. Thank you, Susan. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you.
we're still here at the Sunflower Session. We're about to go on to the third session, and I've got one of the poets I met tonight. This is Mary from International Writers Network. Just want to get, you were brilliant tonight. How did you find coming back and just reading at these sessions?
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
I said, how did you find coming back and just reading at this session after COVID? You've been away with COVID. I think it's the first one since COVID, isn't it? How did you find tonight?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think I think people were deprived of like sort of getting together and performing and sharing each other's work and listening to each other's work. So I think it's been a long time coming, and I think people are really coming back to these sort of events with a sort of a relish and a sort of a renewed enthusiasm and kind of an appreciation of what we lost out on for the last 2 years. So it's great.
I thought your poem was really good. Could you just remind me of your name and
I'm Daniel Ryan.
Listen, Daniel, we run a writers program called International Writers Network, which would be really good to have you on there. Are you willing to come and just share more about your writing journey for others to learn from?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I take it that's a yes, so I will get a hold of him and we'll be able to hear him on the International Writers Network. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And what about you? How were you? How did you find the session? I'm going to come to you too. How did you find it?
Well, this is the second time I'm actually back here at the Sunflower Session. I think it's the third. I think it's fantastic that we're back here, and I see a lot of enthusiasm from people, not only to read their own poems. I can see people are really enjoying, and most of the people in the room are really respecting the people who are reading. I think that's it's just fantastic, and it's just sharing the culture.
Hi, this is Liz, and she's here at the Sunflower Session, and are you the first one to read?
Yes.
So maybe I may just stay because I don't want to miss my bus. This place is so magnetic, you don't want to get out there, but I need to get out. But I'm here with Liz. Liz, how are you?
I'm great. Delighted to be here and lovely to see you again, Mary.
And Liz, you're reading tonight.
Yes, I am.
I'm from your own personal.
Yes, I'm going to read a few poems, two or three poems from a book which came out last year during the pandemic when we weren't able to have launches or readings, and it's called Learning to Tangle. And it's about the experience I had of learning to tangle.
And I think you are the next one to read, so I'm just going to hold on for that next session. Hope I don't miss my bus, because it's wonderful to just meet the author of books and poetry. So Liz, thank you so much. Have you enjoyed being around people today?
It's really lovely to be back.
I could do it all. A name is gone. Still my prayer, thoughts of you.